Hello and welcome to Pod 9 of the official Palace Pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube, the Palace app and all the social medias. It's Ryder Cup weekend, hence the rubbish pun is the title of this pod, so make sure you watch the Europe versus Africa foot goal feature we made with Luka Milivojevic, Johnny Williams, Jordan Ayew and Pat Suare. But back to this podcast. This week, I caught up with former Palace striker Neil Shipley. James McArthur looks ahead to Bournemouth. A couple of Palace ladies give us an update. Statman is Statman and Roy is Roy. But first, let's hear from Joel Ward, who with James McArthur visited St Chad's Primary School, which is just 5 minutes walk from Sellers Park, to donate some new equipment from the Palace for Life Foundation. And Joel also took a PE lesson with the kids. I spoke to Joel about a lycra-clad Instagram post of his. And as you'll hear from the outtake, it confused him. Okay, Joel, I just want to talk to you because I saw on Instagram you posted a picture of a cyclist in Lycra. Was that you or Martin Kelly?
When?
On Instagram.
Yesterday or the...
Yeah, yesterday.
A while ago. Because I done one last week and yesterday.
Oh, yesterday. Richmond Park?
Yeah. Yeah. But the last week was with a mate of mine.
Oh, okay. This week was Martin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to just yeah, but this didn't week. Know which one it was.
Right, start again. Okay, Joel, I just want to talk to you a bit because you posted a video of a cyclist in Lycra on Instagram. Was that you or Martin Kelly?
That was Kells, yeah.
So is it something you do together?
No, this is the first time we've done it and got out on the bikes. But it's just a nice way to get out and spin the legs after a game and just get moving again.
Yeah, what's the science behind that?
I think obviously after the game you just got the lactic builds up in your legs, the stiffness, and it's just a way to get the blood flowing, get the muscles moving, get them pumping again and get the tiredness and lethargicness out of them.
How long does it take to after playing a full 90 minutes for your legs to stop aching?
To be honest with you, like nowadays the recovery's like pretty quick, I think, and the way in which people recover is good, so you kind of can recover pretty quickly. But we normally have a work in like a 48-hour block, where you have a day rest and a day active recovery, which benefits the body and kind of flushes the body out and gives us the best chance to then go and train and prepare for the next game.
How much have you invested in stuff away from the club, like your own equipment?
Yeah, I've got quite a few bits. I've got Game Ready, which is like an icing and compression machine. I've got the Normatec, which is a like compression.
Is that the thing on the black thing on big your legs sleeves, that everyone always posts pictures of?
Yeah, so yeah, they're the Normatecs. And Compex as well, and then you've got the foam rollers, so I try to make sure that I recover as well as I can and look after my body as well as I can.
You play centre-back for a period of the game, a bigger period of the game than right-back the other day. Was that more knackering or less knackering than playing right-back?
It's different. It's very different. Any time you move around the pitch, there's always different challenges. It was rolling back the years, playing at centre-back, and it's something that I've done before, but haven't done for a while. But it was great to obviously be on the pitch to play and to be involved, and more importantly to come away with a win.
And just to end on, you're cycling for Richmond Park. Have you got any cycling recommendations for any of the Londoners listening to the podcast?
I don't profess to be, a cycling pro, but I'd say. Well,
Richmond Park's nice, it's got deer.
Yeah, Richmond Park's great. But are you talking specifics about cycling?
Where would you want to start?
I'd say I like Richmond because there's not as many cars and the speed there isn't crazy for cars and traffic. And there's a lot of cyclists there, so you can always try and pick one off in the distance and try and catch them and you get a bit competitive. although there's also a lot of guys there that are far too good at cycling.
Thanks, Joel.
No worries.
Joel Edward Philip Ward there. Neil Shipley scored 15 goals in 70 appearances for the Eagles over two spells, but most importantly, he got the winning goal in the 2004 playoff final. I caught up with him outside Legends at Sellers Park, where he hosts on match days. Neil, let's go back in time, 1996, when you first joined Crystal Palace. Do you remember what the situation was at that point?
Yeah, I was at Southampton. Graham Souness had come in. and like he does quite a lot, he wanted his own men in. And I got shipped out, as the saying goes. I obviously come here, dropped down a division, but after speaking to Harry Bassett, and I think I knew Andy Roberts anyway, who was here, I thought, yeah, I really fancied this, and I thought we'd get promoted, I thought we'd have a good chance, and I was proved right. And I know we had to do it for the playoffs, which obviously Palace quite like doing, but it was an easy move for me to make.
So that first season, so you would have been playing with Dougie Freeman and David Hopkin. What was that like as an attacking force?
Yeah, often when I talk to the punters and stuff, it must have been great to be a fan in that time, because you had me, Bruce Dyer, Dougie, even George and Dyer used to come on, but then obviously Hopkin from midfield. But we actually felt if we went one or two down that we could still win the game 4-2 or 3-2, and that's what happened quite a lot. I mean, it was goals galore. You know, David Hopkin had an incredible season. He scored so many goals from darting runs from midfield, and he was fantastic.
Was it disappointing going up that season and they brought in so many new players and maybe didn't get as much of a chance as you might have wanted?
Well, no, the first spell, I think I played quite a lot. Some of the players that come in, I don't think we bought well, if I'm completely honest, looking back. And really, we had no one to blame but ourselves. We didn't win a home game, I think it was till April, was it? I think it might have been Derby or someone.
Yeah, but that was the one.
You know, and you look back on that and you think, how's a club supposed to stay up with form like that? But I mean, we had some great away wins. We had a Mr. Lombardo, who was a pleasure to play with, and what a lovely man as well. So we you know, it was a good time. It was just a shame we couldn't stay up, because it would have been nice to build on that and stay in the Premiership for a few years.
And you left the club and then you came back again, and again obviously got promoted in the first season there. Tell us what just the secret was from Ian Dowie's perspective, how he got you believing.
Well, you know, I mean, as professional footballers, you are fit to a certain level. What I would say that when he did come in, the work ethic just went massively up. We had John Arbin, who was a tough Australian. He liked rugby, if he's honest, rather than football. But his job was to get us fit. He was a motivator like that. Does that work all the time? I always describe it as your car. When they ask you how many car miles do a year on insurance, like run-of-the-mill 10,000 miles or whatever, we must have done about 30,000. That's what it felt like. It was hard. I don't think you could do that every year, but we were winning. And I think when you get a regime, if you want to call it that, where we're winning, people buy into it. It didn't surprise me that it didn't work out at Charlton, because you've got the likes of Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who I don't think he'd be licking his lips at going swimming at 8 o'clock in the morning and then having three sessions after that. So it worked for a certain degree. And we were pleased to go on with that journey. You know, when you're winning, you're working hard, and we got our rewards. Hell of a thing to do from where we were to get promoted.
Well, it seems everyone we talk to, and AJ we've spoken to, and Michael Hughes as well, says that Ships has got a good few stories. Do you enjoy telling stories to the fans?
Well, yeah, as you get older now, it is just all about reminiscing, I always test them to see if they were at Cardiff, and I always say I bent one in, 20 yards just to see if they were there, and I have to tell them it was a scrappy two-shinner. But no, it's great. You tell the stories, because it's what we were about. We were lucky enough to play in a good side where we were good on the pitch, but we sort of had quite a good life off it as well. We're socialising,
There's some characters in that team. We went out to Helsinki to film with Aki Rialati at one point. What was he like to be in a team with?
Yeah, Aki. Yeah, good old. I remember of Aki is back then we had the pro zones, how many passes you make and what's your percentage. And I looked at him one game and I thought, you're just making sideward passes, And come the Monday, he'd be going, the most passes was, and we used to sort of have a laugh with him over that. But no, he was a great player and a good lad. As I say, we had that in abundance, We good side, pleasure, absolute pleasure to play with them all.
It was a special team that year, wasn't it?
It was, for what we actually did, yeah. I mean, people will always look back. I mean, Steve Kemba got the sack sort of Christmas time when, thought we got a rough deal, to be honest, with a group of players. It just wasn't happening, and I think it's more players and the manager on that part, and injuries I think were playing quite a big part of Steve Kemba's team. But Ian Dowie come in, got ourselves fit and went on that run, and it was an incredible run to do what we did. I mean, we only just made it. I mean, we were awful at Coventry away for last game of the season, and I think Brian Dean got the header for West Ham, which got us into the playoffs. So we rode our luck a little bit, but And then it was all down to one game, and I don't even think we were that great on the game, but just a little bit better than them.
And Michael Hughes, another guy that we filmed with, he said that the biggest mistake we made was selling you at the season after we went down, because he felt like you would have been the perfect player to get us back up again.
Yeah, but that's all... I didn't get my chance in the Premiership with Mr. Dowie. The people we signed, you know, Sandor, Torghelli, I don't mind being replaced by someone who I think he's proven, but he turned out, that's just my opinion on things like that. I ended up going to Sheffield United. I think it was just one of them things where the club wanted to move on in a different direction, but I was proved that I could still do it because I got Sheffield United up that season. So, yeah, Hughes, you might be right, but we never know now, but that's a nice thing to say.
You retired in 2007, I think. What kind of things have you been up to since then?
I tried my hand at non-league management. I'd done that for a few years, managed three clubs, I think it was, in the end. Enjoyed it. I'm surprised I lasted long as I did. My route I was trying to do was start really low and try and get myself to a decent level, because I did enjoy it, and I ended up getting a little bit frustrated, really. I was trying to get the professionalism and, obviously, the fun, like a bit of both non-league, and I thought I'd done quite well, but I never really pushed on. I was going for interviews or trying to better myself, and I weren't getting weren't even getting an interview. So knocked that on the head, and I enjoy doing what I'm doing now.
Is it true that you're a cabbie?
I'm still actually, believe it or not, trying to do that. So
is it the knowledge?
Yeah. I've been doing it for years. I think I'm going to break the record of how long, but it is something for anyone who wants to do it. You cannot have like a week off here and there. You got to really attack it, and I've been lacking on that.
One of my best mates did it, actually. He just spent 3 years on a scooter, pretty much, going around London.
Yeah, I like that bit. I like being nosy. So it's a revision part of like almost going back to school. And I will get there eventually, because I do want to do it, yeah.
And just finally, on Crystal Palace, like how big a club were they in your career, looking back on it?
Massive club for me. You know, since I've been coming back here doing the hosting, you know, it's like nothing's changed. I.e. a family club, they look after you. I'm really pleased that the football side is going well. You know, this is what we all wanted back in the 90s and you know, when we in the 2004, is to be an established Premiership club. And they are. You know, what they've done last season is absolutely remarkable. To go 7 games without scoring a goal and not winning, and to stay up. So it's good. I'm really pleased on the football side of it. I'm hopefully the stand when that all happens. That'll be, been crying out for that, to be honest, you know, boosting it up. But look, it's a lovely place to come, and you know, I do feel this is my home.
Thanks, Neil.
What a lovely man, and make sure you come and cheer Neil on at the Marathon March on the 13th of October. And now a man who could probably run 3 marathons a day, James McArthur, speaking to Premier League Productions.
James, that looked like fun out there. How did you enjoy the Premier League Stars event?
Yeah, it was really good. The kids were very loud and lively, and it was nice to see.
How important is it to do these things in the community with the club?
It is. Our club's very, very good at it. The players have got on board with it as well, and it's obviously, as I say, it's nice to see the kids so happy to see us as well.
It's not been a bad few days. The club obviously did very well midweek in the Cup after a bit of a frustrating time against Newcastle at the weekend. The sun is shining, so do you think there's been a bit of a confidence boost in the camp ahead of Bournemouth?
There is. We're playing really well at the moment. Obviously, we need to be more clinical in front of goal. But our performance level has been high, and if we keep that up, then as soon as we start scoring, we'll keep winning games and keep pushing up that table.
What are you expecting of Bournemouth on Monday? Because very, very little separated you last season. There were some high-scoring draws in both fixtures.
Yeah, it's a tough game. Monday night under the lights as well. They'll be looking forward to it as much as we are. They're on a good run at home, so we know it's a tough game, but we're playing with a lot of confidence, as I said. Our away form's been good as well, so we feel that we can go there and pose ourselves in the game and get the 3 points.
Your away form has been good. That's where the large proportion of the points have come from. Has there been anything in that, do you think?
Taking chances, because as I said, we've been creating chances at home as well. It's about being clinical. When we've been away from home, we're getting those chances and taking them. We just need to make sure that we keep our performance level high. Maybe teams feel a wee bit more under pressure to try and attack us, and it leaves them exposed, maybe.
What about the reverse side of things at home? Do you think there's anything to be said for perhaps why you struggled a little bit more there, especially in front of goal?
I don't know, maybe confidence. When you get that goal, then you obviously feed off that confidence, but we're not scoring as many as we would like at home. Playing well, but it's all about results in this game.
Seems like there's never really a shortage of goals when it comes to Bournemouth. Is it a good time to face them? Because they've just had four put past them by Burnley in the Premier League as well.
The Premier League is so unpredictable. You can always create a case for playing a team at a good time or a bad time, really. We know that we're going to be on a top game to get 3 points. And as he says, with the win during the week against West Brom, it hopefully gives us that confidence.
Do you think you might have the edge over Bournemouth this season? Because by the end of the season, I think you finished the same on points and just one place above them in the table. Why do you think that you are so close comparatively aside? Is a lot of that to do with the playing style? Do you think you're quite similar teams?
Yeah, they've got a lot of pace and power on their team as well, attacking-wise. Very similar to ourselves. We're not really comparing ourselves to Bournemouth. We're just trying to do the job that we can do to the best of our ability, and if we do that, we'll finish high up the table.
You weren't involved midweek, along with a couple of other key players. I think Roy Hodgson said it was almost a faultless performance from those that were involved. Does that kind of keep you on your toes at all as a midfielder?
The competition that we've got keeps you on your toes anyway. Obviously, when the boys go and do well, it's great, but it's up to the players who are playing like they were playing the other night to do their job. And obviously, you want to be finding yourself in that team on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday, Monday, any time. So competition's great, and it's only good for performance levels.
There was no Wilfried Zaha midweek. There's lots that's been said, as you know, about this record you have when Wilf isn't involved, but the likes of Andros produce the goods. I'm sure that's a good confidence boost to know that when push comes to shove, you do have goals in other areas of the pitch.
We do. It's obviously not a stat that we like, but that's what it is. We want to keep him on the team. Let's say that. He's an amazing player for us. He's got so much ability that can cause teams a lot of damage. So we want him on the team, but we know that when he's not in the team, we need to make sure we do better to win games.
Saw the news yesterday that the club have released a statement saying there's going to be efforts to be made that the singing section of the fans will be seated together next season. Just going back to this record that you've had at the start of this season, were you as the players quite pleased to hear that the fans, the most vocal fans, are going to be back together again for the start of next season? I mean, how much do they impact you at home?
All the fans impact us. It's not just the fans that sing a wee bit louder. We appreciate every single one of our fans, and the club are obviously dealing with the matter on hand. We as players need to give the fans something to shout about, and when we start scoring goals, then every single fan will be shouting.
Like Bournemouth, you seem to have not quite found some consistency yet this season. You must be hoping over the next couple of games, especially before you hit that pretty difficult October, that you manage to find a little bit of consistency now.
Yeah, that's the aim for every team, to get that consistency, to keep winning games. And when you're not playing well, get a draw. When you're playing well, turn that draw into a win. And that's obviously the aim.
Super.
Thank you.
James McFarlane MacArthur there. What a name. Okay, now let's have our first Palace Pod, Palace Ladies update. Kira Watling and Jordan Butler also joined Joel Ward and James MacArthur at the primary school, and I chatted to them on the field after the PE lesson. The interview jumps all over the place throughout their season so far, so probably helps if I run through their results. So I'm just going to log on to cpfc.co.uk/ladies. Let's have a look at the results so far. So they started off with two games in the Continental Cup. First one was against Tottenham Hotspur Ladies, which was 1-1, but they won it on penalties, which means that they got 2 points for that game. It's a group format. The second game in the Continental Cup, they beat Yeovil Town away 1-0. And then into September, their first game of the English Women's Championships, they lost 2-0 at home to Leicester City. And then they played in the Continental Cup again, and they lost 4-0 at home to Chelsea. And then they went away to Lewis, on Wednesday the 19th of September. They were 1-0 up at half-time and lost 2-1 in the end, but they got their first point of the season on Sunday the 23rd of September when they drew 1-1 with Millwall. Let's speak to the ladies now.
Right, I am on a school playing field at St Chad's Primary School in South London somewhere. With Palace ladies players, midfielder Kira Watling,
yep.
And defender,
there we go.
Jordan Butler. Jordan, sorry for classifying you not as a defender on the videos that we did. Can you forgive us?
Debatable. I mean, I know it's quite easy to misinterpret the fact that I am a defender, considering, you know, I'm one of the top goal scorers, got the assist on the ball. So it's quite an easy mistake to make, I understand, but I'll forgive you.
It's only one goal she scored.
And one assist.
That's quite good for a defender.
Exactly. Ask Kira what she's got.
One goal and one assist.
There we go. Look at us go.
So, let's talk about the season. It started off, first game of the season. How did you feel like that one went?
Really well for us. I think it was the first game that we'd played as a team, a competitive match. And so, for us to sort of go out and put the performance out that we did against Tottenham, against a well-established team in the league that we've been playing in. I know it was a Conti Cup game, but yeah, the performance was great and we come off with the win in the end with the 2 points, well, draw and the 2 points from the win of the penalty shootout. So, yeah, sorry about that one.
Yeah, this is a podcast. I can't even flash up, like, text to say what's going on.
Maybe
Leicester,
slow it
down. Let's talk about Leicester, okay. The first game, Leicester. The first game of the Championship, Kira.
Yeah, we should have performed better as a team. I don't really know what happened on the day, but it just didn't work for us. And it's something we've got to work on as a team and progress. And we're just getting used to each other as players. And, you know, some players haven't worked with management before. So hopefully as it goes on, we can start getting some wins. We've got a first point now. So.
Yeah, first point.
Yeah.
That was, so you obviously nearly got one against Lewis, didn't you? Was that one of those classic game of two halves, that one? Because you were in the lead, weren't you?
Yeah, I think it was. We went in at half-time 1-0 up and we come out thinking, like, obviously we knew we were on top of the game, and I think it was just two silly mistakes that we made from set pieces. It wasn't like that they actually played through us or any time deserved to get them two goals. So I think for us it was, we were so disappointed sitting in the change room after the game to have essentially the 3 points at half-time to come away with absolutely nothing. Such a long journey for us. It was really disappointing, and I think a lot of that was, we then put that into the game on Sunday and managed to get our first point of the season. So we're on the mark now and hopefully build on that.
Yeah, is there any kind of aim this season at all?
Yeah, obviously we wanted to come in with positive impact, and from now I think it changes. We're getting our first point and we don't want to end up the bottom end of the table. We want to come in and prove a point and show we're meant to be as a team. So hopefully from now maybe mid-table, mm-hmm. I'd say, is a good aim.
It must be fun, right? Because whenever we have you guys down for any events... Sorry, I just got attacked by an insect. Whenever we have you guys down for events, you're always fun. You always seem to get along really well with each other. You're always guaranteed entertainment. What point do you guys have to get to know each other? Because you only train a couple of evenings a week.
Yeah.
And then the game day. When do you spend time with each other?
So sometimes we do little social events. I mean, we had one a couple of weeks back. And I think we sort of said, like, we'll try and make it more of like a monthly thing, just to sort of go out and see each other in a different environment and just go out and let your hair down, really,
yeah,
isn't
I
it?
Think so. Because we don't spend a lot of time, we look forward to seeing each other.
Yeah.
It's not every day,
absence
so.
Absence make the heart grow fonder and all that jazz.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
You're so nice, aren't you?
I mean, how long have I known you, Jill? 10 years?
Maybe like, 10 years.
Oh,
ten
were you at Millwall together?
Charlton, Millwall.
Oh, God, you've all played for Charlton. This is disgusting. I'm ending it there. You've both played for Charlton and Millwall.
But we love Palace.
Yeah.
Palace for life.
Our blood now.
Okay, good. Well, thanks for chatting. Bye.
And hopefully we'll have more updates from Palace ladies throughout the season, even though they did play for and right, I'm over at Sellers Park now. I did the earlier parts of this podcast from the training ground, but now I'm at Sellers Park. Statman is next to me, so I'm going to do this link next to him. But let's first play his jingle. I'm a Statman. And what a jingle that was. Fantastic. Look at the state of my lid on that coffee cup. That is how many speed bumps there are between the training ground and Selhurst Park. Can you describe my lid for the listeners?
It's filthy. What I will say, I think you've been speeding. I think that can be taken in as evidence in a courtroom and clearly shows that you've been speeding. There is coffee everywhere.
There is, and in my car as well. That was a bumpy ride here to the Vice President's Lounge, where on the wall we have signed photos, signed shirts, Sean Scannell, Neil Dans, Leon Court, Nathaniel Klein and Andrew Johnson. Spend much time in here?
Legends. I do sometimes on a match day. I used to get my food in here, yeah. So, yeah, it's a lovely place, lovely room. It's got the look of, it looks a bit soundproof, doesn't it, at times, with the layout.
But some cream-studded leather on the walls.
Yeah, that's the style. I'm a big fan of that, yeah. So, that's good. Have you been in here before?
I've had a few meetings in here.
Was your interview in here? The famous interview that got Chrissy Grierson the dream job.
No, that was in a mobile van in the car park.
Oh, the only way is up, really, from there, isn't it?
I'd just like to say about that there was a minute and a half video or something on YouTube, which is very cringy, but it was more than 5 minutes. They just edited out all the good bits, which I now do to other people. So, Statman.
Good. You're going to edit this all out now, aren't you?
Yeah. Okay, Palace Bournemouth, Monday night, under the lights, down at the whatever stadium it is called now.
Well, can we just start? You know, I just want to say, you know, I always find these weekends tough. The ones where we have to wait until Monday night. I don't know your thoughts on that.
Well, I don't, because I get a weekend off.
Yeah, okay. Well, you probably love it. Okay, yeah, from a personal point of view.
And I'm not working this one, actually, on Monday night. We're operating a rotation policy now at Crystal Palace. We've got more depth in our squad. So I've actually got Monday night off. I don't know where I'm going to watch it, but yeah.
You will be watching it, though.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Okay. I'm addicted.
Okay. I'll come on to the importance of Monday and why, actually, that's a good thing. But just a little reminder, if you haven't done it in the pod, Saturday night, League Cup draw. The excitement of the Cup, eh? Are we up for it?
Yeah, I'm always watching the Quest channel. So, obviously, you know, I
knew
it was coming.
Channel 144, just for views. Channel 144, Saturday night, 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Tune in.
Fantastic. And if you're listening to this after the draw, I hope you've already booked your tickets to the away game at Man City that we're definitely going to get.
Yeah. I've got a crystal ball there if that's the case. Yeah.
I'd like Burton away, by the way,
yeah,
because I'm getting married near St George's Park in a field, which means if we go there away, yeah, I mean, I could take the next day maybe off as a loo day or even a holiday day, and then I could do some wedding planning, like maybe meet a florist. So,
from a personal point of view, I could do with a home game. Because I have to work the home games, and I could do with the time off in lieu for a holiday as well. So.
Okay, you just gave a clue away that you work for the club. Right, we haven't had any stats, and we are three and a half minutes in.
Let me stat you. starting with Bournemouth then. So what's their record like against Palace? It ain't great. It's not great, Chris. They've won only once in their last six Premier League games against Palace. What about the Vitality Stadium, I've heard you say?
What about the Vitality Stadium?
You've just said it. We've got a good record there. We've lost just once out of the last five away games there. This is, though, after a dreadful run in Division 1. Palace fans that made the trip down there will not have happy memories. We lost 9 out of the last 10 games there in Division 1. But thankfully, in the Prem, we've turned it around. You're looking at me confused there, like I've made up that stat.
I just didn't know. I've got a sore neck. I slept properly. I'm just rubbing it.
Okay.
Now I'm going to sip from my filthy lid.
And speeding here probably didn't help as well, and spilling the coffee. Right then, let's move on to... let me ask you a question, actually. Do you like betting, Chris?
No, I'm not. No. I do. We've got a betting sponsor. Yeah, I love betting. Sorry, what I meant to say was, as an employee of a Premier League club, I'm not allowed to bet on football worldwide. So, no, I do not like betting on football for me personally.
Well done. You haven't got caught out there. I would have caught you out there live on air, which would have been fantastic. You're absolutely right. You can't bet. But if you could, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a little hint here. I'll throw something in the mixer here that I've pulled out. The away side has opened the scoring in the last 4 Premier League games between these two sides.
That's a good stat.
Yeah, it is a great stat. And do you know what? If you're going to push me, I see you pushing me here to make a prediction. I'm going to make one straight off the bat here. Palace to score first. It's got to be Wilf. He's scored 3/4 of our Premier League goals so far. So I'm going to, if you want a first goal scorer, who to score first? Let's go with Wilf. Let's go with Palace. And do you know what? That leads on to the stat. I hope I'm not saying it every week. I gave it to you last time. One win away from 99 Prem wins. And
no, we're on 99 Prem.
Sorry, what? Thank you very much.
Come on.
Sorry. One win away from the 100 and one win away from the 200 in the top flight. So I'm going to stop saying that stat, really, until that happens, I think. And right, let's talk about Monday. Do you like Mondays, then?
I don't mind them.
Okay.
It wouldn't be as good a song if it was I Don't Mind Mondays.
No, it'd be a dreadful song. Right. As an ardent Palace fan, though, you probably like Mondays, don't you?
Yeah, Monday night under the lights.
Yeah, I'm leading you on to something here.
Go on,
so tell Mondays.
Me.
Mondays are Palace's best day to play in the Prem. We have our highest win record on a Monday. Christian Ball happened on a Monday. Obviously not a win, but a great night. And also, obviously, that famous Arsenal win.
Oh, that was good.
What a night, 3-0. So, yeah, a third of all our Premier League games on a Monday, we've won. And let me throw something else into the mix.
Chuck it in there.
I'm throwing it in, right? Bournemouth, they hate Mondays. So they've never won a Premier League game on a Monday. In fact, they've only scored once on a Monday, and that was in January against Brighton.
This is all sounding very positive.
It is. Shall I whack some negatives in here?
Whack them.
Okay, Bournemouth, though, unbeaten in their last four Premier League home games. They've won three, they've drawn one. And if you're going to push me, again, I see you pushing me, the man to watch out for, Bournemouth, Ryan Fraser. He's had a hand in five goals in his last four Premier League games at the Vitality. So Ryan Fraser, my word, does he love to play at the Vitality. Four goals and one assist. So yeah, that's my stats.
I think you've gone for Wilf there. Surely Andros Townsend. I know he scored two the other night, so as he used up some goals. But we, after the Newcastle game, we thought he was great in the office. So we were planning on filming training anyway and just concentrating on Andros Townsend this week. But then he filled up our content with those goals anyway. So we predicted it in a way.
Okay, so you're tipping him.
I felt like it was coming. And I think he looks really good at the moment. So I think Townsend's going to get another.
Do you know what? I mean, that's very easy to say, Chris, after the game, isn't it? Say that before.
If anyone was taking notes in our weekly meeting, they probably weren't. So
he's
no evidence.
He's going to be man of the match, do you think, on Monday night?
I think he'll score.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And Chris Grierson's prediction, sponsored by Mamba X?
Yeah, I predicted the 3-1 for that 0-0 against Newcastle.
Went horribly wrong. Yeah,
so I was talking about expected goals.
Yeah.
My prediction is a 1-0 away win for Crystal Palace. Andros Townsend with the goal.
Okay.
And who with the assist? Tompkins' assist.
Oh, that's a weird one. Yeah, so from a corner, weird, knocked down, maybe.
I know, this coffee that I'm sipping from. So what about you?
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm going to say, quote a wise man here. I don't know which wise man quoted this, but I'll quote him nonetheless. The greatest predictor of the future is the past. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to look at these stats. And if I was to really analyse these, what do the stats say? Let's go with Monday. I'm going to say that Palace got a great record on the Monday, so I'm not going to say that Palace are going to lose. I'm going to say that Palace are going to score first. I'm going to go with Wilf. But let's say Ryan Fraser pull it back, 1-1. Very, very precise prediction there.
So you think a 1-1?
I'm going to say 1-1.
1-1 final score. Okay, interesting. Right, I'm going to give you the honour now, seeing as I'm here and I can't bother to try and find another quiet place at the training ground to record the last link. I'm going to let you introduce Roy Hodgson in his press conference, even though we're recording this before the press conference and you've got no idea what he's going to say. Statman, introduce Roy.
Right, Roy Hodgson, been about for years and years and years. Incredibly successful managerial career, ex-England manager, now Palace manager. Will you please give it up for Roy Hodgson?
That's so good.
Can you begin by talking us through any injury news for the side?
We picked up an injury, of course, against West Bromwich Albion. We tried a redevelop, but luckily we don't think it's as bad as we first feared when he had to come off so early in the game. He's had a scan and we're hoping that he'll be back in training towards the end of next week, but he's out of the game at the weekend. And Christian Benteke, we're monitoring on a day-to-day basis. He's improving, but as yet he's still having treatment, so he's out of the question as well. But otherwise, we have a clean bill of health.
Including Wilfred Zaha, because he had a slight back twinge before Newcastle.
Yeah, it was only, I think, a slight spasm that happened, but it didn't affect him in any way, actually. And he's trained all week.
Okay. Bournemouth have been somewhat unpredictable so far this season, especially following their last league match, which was a 4-0 defeat to Burnley. But would you agree that that's not necessarily indicative of their performance as a whole?
Oh, absolutely. I think they made an excellent start to the season. And from what I understand in the Burnley game, it is one of those games where you don't get actually outplayed and sort of thrashed 4-0. You can see goals at the wrong time and the rest of the game is a fairly even affair. But unfortunately, they take their chances and you don't. You end up looking as though you've been totally and utterly outplayed. But I understand that wasn't the case. I think it was a pretty even game up there and Bournemouth played well enough again. They got on the end of a bad result. So we know how good they are. In particular, we know how good they are at home. So we're preparing for a tough test, a very tough test.
It's been well documented that Wilfred is concerned about heavy challenges going in on him. As his manager, are you equally concerned because he's such a vital player for you?
I think I'm concerned for him, of course, but I'm concerned for all players. I think, you know, we as coaches and managers, we don't want to see the best players in the league and the most dangerous players, the most exciting and entertaining players in any way kicked out of a game or intimidated. So I think I speak for the bulk of my colleagues when I say that as well. But what happened and what was said for me is very much water under the bridge, and we certainly don't allude to it or talk about it at all. We expect Wilf to continue to take players on, to continue to go into situations where he risks being fouled or risks being kicked, because he's a brave guy. And we trust 100% in the referees to crack down on any wrong tackles, on any bad fouls, any wrong behaviour. We expect the referees to do that, and we trust them to do it as well. So as far as I'm concerned, there really is nothing to add on the subject. It caused a week of debate, but it seems to me to be very much in the past now. And for the future, we just expect Wilf to carry on doing what he does so well, i.e. get into dangerous situations and torment opposing defences.
You made 8 changes for the Cup game midweek. Were you encouraged that 3 goals were scored, despite the fact many of your first-team players weren't on the pitch?
I was very encouraged by the performance, Jane. I thought it was a really good performance from the team. I thought from start to finish, the way we went about winning the game, the shape of the team, both in attack and in defence, it was good that we got the reward that I thought our good quality play deserved. And I think that's also very good for me as a coach to know that we aren't totally dependent on just 11 players. We do have a squad here, like most Premier League teams, and we can trust some of those guys who've not had a chance to play from the start so far, that when they get their chance, they're more than prepared to take it and give me a selection headache.
I know he's injured at the moment, but have there been talks or is there a concern from you that Benteke hasn't scored this season yet and he's not been
well,
in form?
I suppose it all boils down to the definition of the word concern, I suppose, really. It's not something that we think about every day and that we are concerned about in the sense that we don't believe it's going to change. Of course, all forwards, the longer they go without scoring, the more that pressure weighs upon them. And there's nothing you as a coach can do about that. The player himself has got to find a way of getting that ball in the net and getting the monkey off his back. But we know that Christian is working very, very hard to do all the right things. We know that we will create chances and get him into goal-scoring positions. And we believe 100% that when that happens, he will take the chances. But we can't change the past. We can't change his statistics from the past. But we still do believe very much in his future. And we believe very much that this is a spell that he's had to go through. And he'll come out on the other side. And when he does, he'll be a great addition for us.
Your former colleague, Dan Ashworth, has moved to Brighton. What do you feel he'll bring to the club? And speaking as a manager, how do you feel he'll benefit Chris Houston?
Oh, he'll benefit him enormously, because it's very good to have someone of of Dan's organisational ability and his football knowledge working at your club. He won't be trying in any way to cut across Chris Hughton and Chris Hughton's job of managing and coaching the first 11, because that's, he won't see that as his job, and he will be there to help and to back Chris with all the things he will need to make Brighton a stronger team. But I think it was a good signing, of course, for Brighton and Hove Albion. I congratulate them on that. I haven't spoken to Dan about his reasons for leaving the FA and taking that job on. I'd be interested to know what they are. But I can congratulate Brighton on getting a top guy on board, because working with him at West Bromwich Albion and then with England, I found him good to work with, and I think that he is the type of person clubs do need in their staff, because these days a football club is more than just 11 guys or 15, 18 guys running around on the pitch and playing a game on a Saturday. We are big businesses now, and a lot goes on within that business structure, and Dan has a lot of knowledge on that subject.
Just finally, if you could indulge me, have you been watching the Ryder Cup? And if so, what
absolutely.
Is it that, what is it that makes it so special?
I saw the tee-offs this morning and had to tear myself away to get out and get ready. I'm a bit addicted in some respect, and so if I'd have indulged myself, I would have probably still been sitting there while the players were starting this morning. But I do take a big interest in it, and I really do hope that Europe can do well on European soil, but the first four balls haven't gone exactly as I would have liked, so I'm hoping for a big turnaround this afternoon, and I should be watching it as soon as I get in this afternoon. As soon as you guys leave me alone, I should be home to watch it.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Okay, Emma?
Right, Emma. A bit more on Bournemouth. What has impressed you most about them this season?
Well, I'm in a better position to answer the question, what's impressed me most about Crystal Palace this evening. I mean, I don't set myself up, I'm afraid, as an expert on Bournemouth. I'm pretty sure that Eddie Howe will be receiving lots of questions in his press conference about Bournemouth and how they've done and how they've started and how well they're playing. I find it difficult to answer those questions, because what I've seen of Bournemouth this season has been bits and pieces on the television, in the television programmes we watch, and of course some from the videos that we prepare ourselves about the opposition, which we present to our players. So their start's been good, there's no doubt about that. You know, 10 points from 6 games is a very good reward. They must be really confident. They haven't changed their team spectacularly. Their football has been pretty stable for the last 2 seasons, and it's a stable football and a stable way of playing which has given them very good results, and they obviously have no reason to change. So we have a good idea what's awaiting us, and it will be a big question. The big question will be, are we good enough to deal with the threats that they pose? And then, of course, to make certain that our football poses enough threats for them, which will give us a chance to win the game.
What are your memories of the match there last season, towards the end of last season, that 2-2 draw?
I thought we threw it away. I thought that at 2-1 we were in a position to win and looking as if we would win, but we made a mistake, I'm afraid, from a cross at the back post, and they equalised very late in the game. So I was disappointed in it.
You were very pleased with the performance in the League Cup against West Bromwich Albion in the week. Does that help to create confidence and, you know, positive team morale just generally after a result like that?
I think the morale's good here anyway. It's been good all through the pre-season. It's been good at the start of the season. We have faith in what we're doing. We believe that we know what we're doing, both when we have the ball and when we don't have the ball. And we believe that with all the work we do together on a day-to-day basis, we improve gradually. We never feel at any stage that we are the finished article. We know there's more work to be done. But I certainly didn't need a good performance to in any way change my thoughts as to where we are as a football club and where we are as a football team. But it is very encouraging that when you do make changes and you bring players in that you really want to see because you've not had them in your first team up to now from the start of the season, at least not as starters. It's very good when they go out against a team of West Brom's calibre and win the game as comprehensively as we did.
And finally for me, how do you feel about playing on a Monday night rather than a Saturday afternoon? How does that change your plans?
No, I think even though I've been going a long time, I don't know that I've ever really been one of those who gets on the bandwagon to say that football is played at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. I think I realised long ago that if we want all the benefits that Sky and BT and all the other organisations now bring to us in terms of finance, they're going to have a good say in when matches are being played and who's playing in those matches, because they're running a business too and they want people to tune into the game. So as far as I'm concerned, I accept whatever's thrown our way and we work hard in the week to prepare for whatever day the game is being played upon. And so I don't have any concerns, if that's the right word, in that respect.
What do you do over the weekend instead? What are you doing at 3 o'clock on Saturday?
Well, they're the strange things. You know, the 3 o'clock on Saturdays, if you're not actually at a game, can be strange moments. What I normally do these days is to get as far away from the TV as possible if I can't find a game to go and see which is suitable. But if, you know, my interest and my concentration and focus is Crystal Palace Football Club, and sometimes I don't want to be diving up and down the country on a Saturday knowing we've got a training session on Sunday and a match on Monday. I prefer to harness my energy and harness my concentration for the match over the weekend that matters to me. And there is only one. There's only one match this weekend that matters to me, and that's Bournemouth against Crystal Palace.